Rich, thanks for taking time to meet with me today to talk about the Kensington.
Mm-hmm.
Rich, what does the Kensington Expressway mean to this neighborhood? What does it mean to Buffalo?
I think what Kensington means to probably the neighborhood, although I don't live here, not close, but not right here, so I say this a little bit at my peril. I think it means a mistake that occurred in Buffalo that's harmed a neighborhood. Highway projects seemed so imperative in the 60s and 70s, sort of without regard to the impact of the people. And this was one of the loveliest places in the city of Buffalo, and now it is not. I think that's bad and unfortunate. And I'm sure the people who lived here when it occurred feel most acutely the loss, but you can't be here without knowing something's the matter.
Rich, the debate about the future of the Kensington Expressway seems to place at odds the ideas the expressway is an economic generator for downtown Buffalo and a reason for the economic devastation of east side commercial strips. What's your take on that issue? Is the fastest possible commute necessary for the city's ongoing revival, or would more value be added to the city by restoring Humboldt Parkway?
These things are very, very hard to be sure about. And one of the laws I do believe in is the one of unintended consequences. So things happen that you don't expect when you make a change. But what we do know now is that Buffalo has an enormous competitive advantage because of the ease of traffic. We're a city built for more than twice our population. We've got lots of ways to get around. I don't think that advantage would be lost if Kensington or Skagit was slowed up and made more human. I think that particularly with the great diversity of where people live and work, it's no longer a funnel into downtown in the mornings and out of downtown in the evenings, and that's it. People commute in all different directions. And our highway system was built with different assumptions that may have been accurate at the time, but have certainly changed by now. So I think we could easily survive slowing down of the traffic on both those highways, and it would not be even noticed in the blip of things as to whether or not Buffalo is competitive or not.
Business First reported recently that Buffalo ranks as having the second shortest average commute time in the United States amongst the 50 large metro areas. Mm-hmm. Can Buffalo afford to slow down some of this commuter traffic?
Yes. First of all, the downtown workforce is about 50,000 people a day on an average work day in a county with a little less than a million, 960,000 or 940,000, whatever the census will show. Although it seems like a lot of traffic on Kensington, and for Buffalo it is, for the county it is not. Traffic is all over the place, and when those statistics are redone, if the average time of the commuter going downtown slows up some, I doubt if it'll produce a percentage or a minute difference for the whole county. No matter what happens in Kensington, because it's not as if it's the single route of direction of traffic, let alone the single route. And traffic does seem to seat its most efficient method of transport, kind of the way water seeks its own level, as long as it's not a barrier or a dam in the way. And we've got a pretty good traffic grid. And there are more and more people who are living downtown or living in places and commuting shorter distances. Buffalo, I think, is repopulating, I hope. I certainly believe some of it is.
Recently, the boulevard option has been introduced by citizen activists as one option to consider on NYSDOT's study to cover portions of Route 33. But NYSDOT is refusing to study it. What's your take on that?
It's a three-part question, I think. Let me deal with the last part first. NYSDOT will do what somebody tells them to do, the governor or the legislature. And as we talked about earlier about my experiences with the West Side Arterial, where NYSDOT was told not to any longer plan for a highway, they could equally be told by law to do so. Now, there might be a requirement to fund some of those studies, but if the legislature or the governor or the legislature and governor combined told NYSDOT this is a public policy of the state of New York, they'll do it. In their own sequencing, they probably won't, because it's not a transportation mission. It's a community improvement mission, and they need to be told that they've got a different thing to think about. So I don't really blame them so much for saying no to that, because in their not only worldview, but in their mandate for the things they're supposed to spend money on, it's transportation related. Now that's for the covering of it. For the boulevard, that's different, because that's part of a transportation method. And I hope they will study that. I don't know what'll happen. Kensington's a tougher nut than Skagitta because of the way it's recessed now. It's almost in a canyon for long portions of it. And the road network has been so badly disrupted that I don't know what the study would show. But it's well worth taking a look at. And certainly in the area of Kensington that is historic Humboldt Parkway, it would certainly be nice to see if they could do something.
Rich, thank you very much.
It's been my pleasure. I spoke to people who were there when that section of the highway was built, Skagitta, not Kensington. And they remembered the bridle path being used, and in their opinion, it was the nicest part of the park. And I think from any objective view, you would think it was also the nicest part of Delaware Park. The McMillan Monument is there. It's interesting, there are no monuments to Frederick Law Olmsted's works in Buffalo. But there are to his, or there's one, to his partner, the Parks Commissioner, who for 30 years oversaw his vision and built it. And they could have put that monument anywhere. And they put it on the bridle path on the hill overlooking what's now Hoyt Lake, but was then Delaware Park Lake. They put the expressway right in front of it. So nobody really knows it's there any longer. It's set back a little bit. And it appears to just be a derelict pile of stone, which to a large extent is what it is. Mm-hmm. But that bridle path was the spectacular part of the park, and it obviously was the thin neck that connected the two halves of Delaware Park. They put the highway right through it. Mm-hmm. But the people we were speaking to, this was in 1974, Bill Hoyt was then Delaware District Councilman. It's his son Sam, who's now the Assemblyman, but he was that councilman in the Delaware District. And the state was undertaking what it called a topics project. It was traffic something improvement projects at the intersection of Parkside and Skagitta and essentially the Kensington, where they all come together. And they were trying to rationalize, in their view, the intersection. And essentially, they were trying to create the equivalent of a three-way interchange there. And now, they weren't going to have clover leaves, but they wanted to make it so the traffic could speed through uninterrupted. And they were looking to accelerate the traffic, the speed of the traffic. And altogether, they were putting in over 50 different signs in that little intersection. 50 signs. No parking, no left turn, no right turn, stay right, stay left. And this is an aside, but if you actually look around and count signs, the number of signs in any block in the city of Buffalo is enormous. And we're sort of immune to them now, but it's something I don't love. And I'd like to someday see a reduction in all signage, particularly government signage, where it's redundant, overdoes it. But be that as it may, in that intersection, they were putting up all these signs. And one of them was going to be a very large overhead sign that was essentially a throughway-like sign that was directing people downtown, airport, whatever it was going to say, right? So as you were heading east on Skagitta, as you were approaching the Parkside intersection, they were going to have this sign. They do have it, but they were going to put it at a certain location that would instruct the traffic. If you want to go onto Parkside, you go this way. If you want to go Skagitta, or if you want to go downtown, you go that way. If you want to go out to the airport, you go the other way. If you want to turn into the college, you do something else. And the neighbors in the area had just plain had it. And that sign became the major cause of a mini-rebellion against state DOT. And among other things, the sign was going to be so large that it would block the views that the houses have on that first street. On the circle, there's one street that runs right along the parallel to Skagitta, looking across the park. Mm-hmm. So you look across the parkway and to the highway to the park. It's going to obstruct their view, and they just had it. And they were picketing, they were doing all this stuff. And I was in law school at the time, volunteering for the councilman, Bill Hoyt, and he decided to make this an issue and took it on with the residents. And every Saturday we had a big picketing thing in the intersection. The roads were all open as they are now. Mm-hmm. They're pretty much the same as they were then. But there's a very large piece of land there that's otherwise unused. And so we were out there picketing and kids and carnivals and all this stuff, but giving DOT as hard a time as we could. And a young DOT guy, who was an assistant project engineer or engineer or something, said in a way that it got onto the record that, quote, what do you expect? The cities are dying, and we're making it easy for people to get in and out of the suburbs, to work in the city and get back to their homes in the suburbs, where presumably it's safe. Well, that put everybody through the roof. And Hugh Carey was running for governor at the time, his first running for the first time. Malcolm Wilson was governor, and so Hoyt dashes off a letter to Wilson, who was seeking re-election, or seeking election. He stepped into the shoes of Nelson Rockefeller, dashed off a letter that said, is this the state's policy? Forget the cities. We didn't quite get a reply to that. But as a good, almost lawyer, I decided I'd look into the books and to see what they told us about where signs had to be placed, and got out the state traffic manual, which is their Bible, and found that the state DOT was telling us that the sign, essentially they were using the word shall be placed here, meaning it has to be. And I plowed through the manual and discovered that it was not mandatory, but optional within a range. And it said it may be placed within a range. And we discovered that the extreme of that range was where we could accept the sign, or the residents could accept the sign, and not, it was closer, it's very close to where the City of Buffalo barns are, as they're called, for the park maintenance stuff. And that the residents said, that's okay. We don't love the sign, but it won't be in our view, it won't really be in parkland, it'll be okay. DOT says, no kid, you're misreading all this. You don't know what these words really mean. And I would point out the definitional section in the beginning of the manual and tell them, no, it says this, not that, and I'm sure this is how to read it. And I looked up cases and did all my homework. They were absolutely intransigent. They weren't going to move the sign. They weren't going to change their opinion. They were just telling us that's it. They got to the point where they were blasting to set the footers in, and I had felt that we were losing, we're going to lose, and told that to Hoyt, and he asked if I could dream up anything else. And I decided the only question was when the state actually acquired the right-of-way for this highway, because if they had acquired it when they built the Skagitta, their more modern environmental laws would not have been triggered, but if they had recently acquired it, they might have to replace parkland of equal value, and so they'd have to give us parkland equal to the size of the footers or whatever it was going to be. So I said, I'll go find out when they got the land. I couldn't find a transfer. And I went to the county clerk's office, and you know how hard it is to prove a negative if something doesn't exist. But we went all over the place. I had all the clerks looking, and we found maps that the state had filed when it had acquired sections of Kensington and of Skagitta. And it's easy for the state to acquire land. They just file maps and then later argue what the price should be. But they had not, I couldn't find one for this section, basically from the circle to Delaware, I think. And we couldn't find it, we couldn't find it, we couldn't find it. And I finally conclude they probably never did it. I was pretty sure if it was around, we would have found it. And so we convened what was going to be the one last meeting. And the DOT guys didn't want to come. They'd already started the construction of this big sign. And we basically told them they have to come. And Hoyt, you know, now unfortunately been passed away for quite a while, was very creative. And he decided he wanted a Buffalo policeman there. And so he called up the police commissioner at the time, who I think was named Blair, and said, I want your ugliest, biggest cop. And he's not supposed to do anything, just look tough. Don't shoot anybody, but just come to this meeting and look mean. And so we get a cop in the room. And the DOT guys come, and the cop's just sitting in the corner. We never explain why he's there. But we tell the state DOT officials that the time for talk is over. They agreed. And we told them we want their road off our park. They're trespassing. And all those cars they've got there, well, they're trespassing too. And we want them to remove them forthwith. And this guy over here is going to help us. You're trespassing. You don't, and so they then told us, well, we'll file a map and it'll be ours. I said, sure. But now there's all this law that you're using federal funds. NEPA, federal environmental impact statement law, is now in effect. They're going to have to give us parkland of equal value. Do they really want to go through this? And we're going to have a whopper. There'll be litigation, there'll be all this stuff. We're prepared to close the road, declare it trespassing, and see what happens. And they say, you know, I think Rich is right. That May says we can put the sign somewhere else.
That's brilliant.
And
that's...
so they did. That was a tiny, tiny little victory.
Uh-huh. And what year was this again?
1974. It was the fall of 1974. Bill Hoyt at the time was running for the state assembly for his first try at it, and he won by more votes than we got. Than he won by 500 votes or something, and we got a bigger margin of victory out of that neighborhood. There's about 10 streets, there are 5 streets. That was almost his margin of victory. It might have been his margin of victory in an area that had not typically gone Democratic. But we won. And in some ways, I think that was the turning point about the sentiment about highway construction in the city. The next year, Bill went and was an assemblyman, and I took the bar exam that summer and was admitted in 1975 when he started in January in the assembly, and I became his counsel and chief of staff. And there was another major highway project that had been proposed for Buffalo that was essentially the last link that the state wanted to build, and it was called the West Side Arterial, which, as 33 comes into Buffalo and makes that fork, one of it going into Elm Oak, the other one curves and sort of makes this strange exit across Edward and suddenly essentially stops, feeds you onto Delaware, but doesn't really go anywhere. It's got that curve onto Pearl Street, and the little section goes across towards Delaware, but it just stops. The West Side Arterial was to take that route right across to 190, where it runs along the river, and connect essentially Carolina Street. And if you look at the entrance to 190 at Niagara, it's very wide.
And it's very long.
And it's very long. And there's nothing in the middle where there had once been houses. Right? There's one city block's been cleared. Maybe two city blocks have been cleared. And what you have are the entrance and exits for a high-speed road like Elm Oak, or maybe like Skagitla. The state had 17 different plans to come across the Lower West Side. And unlike Elm Oak, where it's essentially an alignment with the existing grid, street grid, the West Side Arterial had to cut across sort of the natural grid that we see in most of Buffalo, pretty much north, south, east, west streets, and the diagonals on the west side, where they're coming in at angles, and they don't line up. Right, so all, Michigan, Rhode Island, Connecticut, all those streets are actually at angles to Richmond. It makes it very, very difficult to put a road through, or two roads through. You've got to make a curve to line up with Carolina, and then you can't, there's no straight line. So they were taking out very wide swaths of Buffalo to do it. And there'd been massive disinvestment in that area over time because of all these plans that had gone on for years and years and years.
Homeowners just hanging on, not knowing what's going to happen.
Right, but not investing.
Then selling out at a low dollar.
Right, and speculators buying.
giving up in frustration, speculators coming in, just holding and...
Yes, yes. And it was an awful scene, and it had become, again, a sort of a cause célèbre. And the same junior engineer, who much later became friendly with and liked, told me, when we told him we weren't so happy with the West Side arterial either, he told me that you can't do anything about it because it's in the state highway law. It's actually in the transportation law, where the state Department of Transportation's authority is specified to build arterials. And it's a section of the transportation law called state arterials, and then by community. So the Buffalo section. And in Buffalo it said West Side arterial, gave its general alignment, and gave its distance. And I said, as a young lawyer would say, oh goody, where in the law is it? Because Bill Hoyt's going to be in Albany and we can change laws. And so in 1975, Bill goes to Albany in January, freshman assemblyman, and that was essentially his first major bill. And we had a good year that year, passed quite a few laws. But that one was a very important local bill. When we told DOT we were doing it, and we wanted to get reactions, we were hoping to avoid a veto, and they said, no. We wrote to new Governor Carey, who had beaten Malcolm Wilson, and the state was in this massive financial crisis at the time. I'm probably not as bad as now, but still very significant. New York City was on the verge of bankruptcy, and it was big national attention. Then President Ford was quoted in the Daily News as when he rejected a bailout, federal bailout of New York City. Daily News said Ford to New York, colon, drop dead. Very dramatic times. So Hoyt speaks to Governor Carey and says, we want to eliminate this road. And he said, you mean no cost? And he said, right, we're going to eliminate a state charge, no more planning for it, no more building of it, it's over. And he said, fine. He will sign it, doesn't care what DOT says. And so we passed it, eliminated it, and not immediately, but over time, you began to see reinvestment in the Lower West Side, and now quite substantially so. That little housing project, I never remember the streets it's on, but sort of lining up with what used to be the Dolsky Building is now Avant, where it's a little two-block neighborhood got put in, and now Allentown West is expanding into the area where this highway would have been. It would have been very bad for Buffalo, I think.
Where Prospect becomes Rapin Terrace.
Yes. Right. Yes, it's all through there. And so I think the battle over highways in Buffalo had a turning point with the, I like to think at least, with the Agassiz Circle sign. That was the top of the state's power. And since then there have been efforts to try and correct. It doesn't mean that what's built has been changed, but I think it was the end of the major construction, of expansion, of taking properties, and of that whole sentiment. At the same time, similar things were happening around the state. There's a very interesting place, if you can picture the Albany Mall, that massive project, there's almost like a Guns of Navarone portals at the very bottom of it, where you look out over the Hudson, and these high-speed roads come across bridges, either into the mall or supposedly through Albany. They had proposed a highway. When you go through the mall, if you can picture this, there's a very sharp 180-degree turn that takes you back into the mall, into the underground parking.
Right.
Or you'd make a right and go up there, Swan Street, and along the side of the mall where the legislative office building is.
Okay.
Governor Rockefeller had a plan to have this high-speed highway come across the Hudson, go right through a church that they were proposing to take down that lines up with this thing, and then cut across Albany, running to the west and curving slightly to the north and connecting with 787, I think, as it runs around the city and then eventually connects to the thruway. And that, too, was blocked almost the same time. And so in many ways, I think that was that period, 74, 75, seems to me to have been a turning point for DOT either getting its way completely or being held back. And so I think it doesn't mean that there's not been highway work, there's been reconstruction, there's been improvements, that the thruway was rebuilt along the waterfront. But when the I was with the county when the thruway I-90 was being rebuilt, running along the Buffalo waterfront, and we wanted to put in the bike path, the Riverwalk, along the section in Riverside. We went to the thruway authority early enough and asked them if they could get us 5 more feet of space by pushing the thruway just a little bit more inland, and then we would have space for the bike path on the water's edge. And they did it. In 1975, they would not have been very happy to hear this request, and they certainly wouldn't have granted it. But things have changed. And so Riverwalk, instead of being up on the little hill that runs along the side of Riverside Park, is now right down on the waterfront. Because the thruway was literally relocated. But that was in the mid-90s, I suppose. Mid to late 90s. And certainly, there's a new generation of people in DOT. Now, I've worked with them on highway beautification projects. You see it. When I was kidding around with them, we were doing a tulip bulb planting program on one of the highways. And I was asking if we could make it so that they don't mow the tulips with the big gang mowers and wait till they flower out and then just mow the whole thing. But in the spring, let them grow up, tulips and daffodils. They said, sure. They've got places on the thruway now where they've got native wildflowers growing. They've got the bird boxes that I think, bluebird box, that are really a legacy of Governor Pataki, who was, in his own right, very interested in wildlife, and particularly bluebirds. So we've got the buffalo and the clover leaves in right. a few places. They're different. I think a different generation of engineers are now working there, and it doesn't mean they can fix all the problems of the past, but it's a very different attitude. And interestingly, some census information that's coming in from 2008, not the census underway now, is indicating that there's a repopulation of the cities occurring, in which there's a reversal of the what used to be called the white flight, where families are coming back into the cities. It'll be interesting to see what the census says when it comes out. The 10-year snapshots are a little bit too far apart to help us be sure, but next year we'll know if this is happening. My sense has been that for sure Buffalo's population loss had. The rate of loss has declined dramatically. The line used to be like this, and now it's stabilized. There's a slim chance that it's over, that the population loss is over. Probably not. There's massive relocation within the city, right? And that's to be sure. And the relocation is because Buffalo's lost more than half its population. This relocation is still occurring, and I don't know if it can be rationalized or not, made more sense out of. But that's certainly happening. But as a whole, I would not be just completely shocked if we found that Buffalo's population had held. Now, it's a different population than it was 10 and 20 and 30, but it's more younger people coming in and sort of an older population either dying or moving away, suburbs, nursing homes, Florida. And we've had, not in the area, but not in Buffalo, I don't think, an increase in very elderly, where 90-year-olds have been coming back, live with their children or live near their children, where they need to be looked out for. We know it's happening. We don't know its weight, how much, and how it compares to the people who are still leaving.
Yeah, I think by the end of this year, we'll have a real good understanding of that snapshot, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how Buffalo lines up to other metro areas.